Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 511 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am your host, Kevin Huntsberger, this week being joined by Chad Smart. Chad, thanks for being a part of this week's podcast.
Well, I wasn't a part of the last two, so I was feeling a little lonely, a little left out, a little, didn't have a purpose in life anymore. So it's good to be back.
It is good to have you back. And full disclosure, we are recording this one. Typically, we record on the weekends. Usually, then the show drops on Mondays. However, scheduling conflicts and whatnot, and me being out of the country for part of next week, we are actually recording on Tuesday. So we are almost a week ahead in recording this. So if any breaking news or any big things happen, take a look at the Facebook page because I'll try to keep things up to date on there. But we are actually talking about the late.
Well, I was gonna say real quick before we get into this week, I think we should just go quickly. Oh my! I mean, can you believe? I mean, of course Cody Rhodes beat Kevin Owens at Bash at Berlin. Duh. No one. Or oh my gosh, can you believe Kevin Owens turned heel and won the title at Bash at Berlin? I didn't see that one coming.
That's okay. True. We do have Bash at Berlin happening before that we record, but well after we are done. So, I forgot all about that. Three big events. And I know you watched All In, and obviously a week later, it's kind of old news, and we'll have to see what happens on Dynamite and Collision
Rampage.
Rampage. Thank you. Sorry. What do you think overall of the show?
I thought it was good. AEW always delivers on pay-per-view. I thought I think the consensus is the only match that really probably could have been a TV match was Jericho and Hook. And I think that story just isn't that captivating compared to everything else. The Gauntlet match, I was texting with a couple of friends watching the show as well. I'm glad they didn't put anybody in there who couldn't conceivably go on to have a title match and have be the foregone conclusion that they weren't going to win. So, I think it is shocking that Christian won. We'll see how the story plays out. I know he's probably, out of everyone in there, he's probably the least interesting. But again, we'll see how it plays out. And, we're 2 weeks, or as this show drops, we're 6 days out from All Out. So they've got a quick build. So we'll see how they do.
It will be interesting to see. What are your thoughts, though? I'm assuming I didn't watch, and I know that it being on during the day, I think a lot of fans like that, being able to watch during the day and not commit it to a Saturday night or a Sunday night and can kind of then have the rest of their day and evening.
WWE's been doing it, and Bash Berlin is the same way. Mm-hmm. And so, unfortunately, I will also be out of town this weekend, so I probably won't get to watch Bash until maybe Sunday night or Monday. But I enjoyed being able to wake up. It was over with by 2, and then I had the rest of my day and everything. And I normally am not doing anything in that time frame anyway. So,
right.
So I say, give all the foreign countries all the pay-per-views.
It is an interesting time to be a wrestling fan, to say the very least. And this week, and I realize that we are a week past the announcement that the world has lost one of the all-time greats, in my opinion, in Psycho Sid Vicious, Sid Justice. so many different incarnations.
Humongous, Lord Humongous.
Lord Humongous. And that's really, let's kind of start there. What are your early memories, early thoughts of Sid back in the day? Do you remember the Lord Humongous run at all?
No, because I didn't. I've never watched Memphis wrestling, so I didn't know Sid until he came into WCW or JCP at the time. So,
well, that I remember obviously. Like I've said before, I got all the magazines back in the day, and never saw him on TV, but saw him through the magazines as Lord Humongous, not knowing who he was at the time. But just. I believe he had a feud going with Jake the Snake Roberts before. And that might have been a different incarnation of Lord Humongous now that I'm thinking about it, because I'm not exactly sure when Sid started wrestling, but I feel like he maybe touched with Jake a little bit.
87, before. I believe.
87. Oh, okay, so maybe it wasn't the same Lord Humongous, but definitely coming into WCW, being a part of the iconic Skyscrapers tag team. What were your thoughts seeing him come in and being one of those big men that just really, Conrad Thompson has said it before, if you asked a kid to draw a professional wrestler with a crayon, they'd come up with somebody that looks like Sid. He's just such a big, imposing, intimidating guy.
Yeah, I mean, I was a fan of the Skyscrapers. And, I'm also one of the people who, when Sid showed up in WWF after The Undertaker, was thinking, oh, we're going to get a Skyscraper feud, not realizing that those two did not tag together as the Skyscrapers. They replaced each other and teamed with Danny Spivey. I meant to go through the history of Sid just to kind of refresh my memory, and I did not do that today. But I was, because I'm trying to think of how soon he was in Crockett, NWA. I don't know if he was in the WCW at the time, when they formally changed, but how long he was there before becoming a horseman.
Yeah, so I did do a little bit. I was going by memory on some of it, but I did actually go back and read his history, because I knew we were going to record this podcast. He had come in, like we said, started this team with Danny Spivey. And then that's kind of when the whole horseman thing went a little wonky, because Arn and Tully were still gone from JCP. I guess it was officially WCW by now. So this is like probably late 89 when Arn and Tully leave the WWF. The assumption is that they're both coming back to WCW. However, Tully allegedly fails the drug test and doesn't end up coming back, and it's just Arn. So then it was Arn, Flair, and Ole Anderson for a little bit in like January of 1990. And this is also around the time where Sid and Spivey are teaming up. They're the Skyscrapers. They're dominating. I think it was probably then, because they were trying to present the Horsemen as good guys. And then, obviously Flair turns like he always does on Sting. We lead up to that summer where it's the Great American Bash and Sting ends up winning the title. But by then, somewhere in the late spring of 1990, Sid joins the Four Horsemen. And so let me get your thoughts on that, because it always seemed like, maybe not the first incarnation with Arn, Tully, Ole, and Flair, but definitely the second when Lex Luger comes in. Maybe not so much with Barry Windham either, but you had that kind of muscle guy that wasn't necessarily the best worker, but you had someone that was kind of, again, that physically imposing figure, because, Arn and Tully and Ole and Ric Flair, all great wrestlers, but not necessarily going to intimidate anyone. But Sid comes in and maybe wasn't going to out wrestle anyone, but he definitely was going to look better than anyone else on the card.
Yeah, I mean, he just had that presence and made for a good muscle, kind of like, the way Kevin Nash did when he showed up as Diesel for Shawn Michaels. You need, I'm trying to think of who has been recently, where they put a muscle with somebody, but the muscle looks smaller than the guy they're protecting, and it just doesn't pay off well. So I think Sid coming into the Horsemen, I was a fan, I think, I mean, obviously the Barry Windham, Ole or Tully Arn Flair is the probably the pinnacle of the Horsemen in many fans' eyes. But Sid being there, definitely, I think, a number two or number three incarnation of the Horsemen.
Yeah, and it's an interesting time in WCW. It's an interesting time in wrestling. We've kind of talked about this in the past. By summer of 1990, you know, WWF has the Ultimate Warrior on top after having Hogan on top for many years. And WCW has Sting on top after having Ric Flair as the champion for years. And so kind of running parallel in those regards and trying to find contenders and find wrestlers to step up and be, you know, we were talking a few minutes ago, you mentioned, you know, with AEW's pay-per-view, having someone win that gauntlet match that would be a viable contender. And I can remember, you know, leading into the fall of 1990, one, they're starting to inject this Black Scorpion thing into the WCW story with Sting.
Greatest angle ever.
Yes. While at the same time building up Sid as the contender as well. And it was going to end up being Sid facing off against Sid Vicious facing off against Sting at Halloween Havoc, which was a departure because, again, you know, we were so used to Ric Flair always being involved in those championship matches. And I believe this is the first pay-per-view after Sting won the title. This was in a time before we had monthly pay-per-views. So this was a big deal. You know, Sid is wrestling for the heavyweight championship. He seemingly wins it when he pins Sting, and we'll use air quotes for that because it turns out it's Barry Windham painted up like Sting. A good ruse, a good attempt. And I remember reading about it before I actually saw it. And then actually when you go back and watch it, it's kind of like, it's a little hokey, but I don't know at that time if I was buying, because they had always gone back to Flair as champion. So I don't know at the time if I was 100% thinking that Sid even had a chance, but it definitely a great first contender for Sting as heavyweight champion. Better, I think they did a better job with Sting in WCW than they did with Ultimate Warrior in the WWF as champion.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And, you know, the Halloween Havoc match, I did not see, I don't even know how long it was before I finally saw the actual match. I only saw it through the WCW magazine. And yeah, it's, you know, it's one of those things that when you read about it and you see the photos, you're like, wait, what? What did just happen? And, you know, I'll give WCW creative points for trying something different with the finish and Barry Windham being good enough to fool, you know, unless you're in the first two, three rows.
Yeah.
You probably didn't realize that it wasn't Sting. But yeah, I think, and especially looking back now, you know, times have changed in wrestling, so that probably does come off a little hokier than it did 30 years ago.
Yeah.
But no, I think, but I'm with you where the Black Scorpion, because that was also the show where the Black Magician showed up and, you know, was doing all types of magic. So it's like, who is Sting? Where is the focus on? And so I can agree with you that, yeah, you probably didn't buy Sid as a chair. And I don't know if you really bought Sid as a champion at that time anyway, even if he wasn't, you know, even if Sting hadn't just won the title, was Sid prepped enough to be someone that the focus was on? Because like we just said earlier, he was kind of the muscle of the Horseman.
Yeah.
And you don't expect that person to be front and center.
Yeah, very good point. And it was just a couple months later that the Horsemen seemingly quietly break up because there was no big formal booting like we did with Lex Luger or with Ole Anderson, but Sid kind of goes his own way and Arn and Ole and I'm sorry, Arn and Barry Windham and Ric Flair are all just kind of together still. They start feuding with Doom over the tag team titles. And by the time Starrcade rolls around, Sid reunites with Dan Spivey in a tag team match as the Skyscrapers. And I remember this very well. I was there. I was at Starrcade 1990. And I can remember the pop that erupted when Sid came out. And the match was very quick. It was, I think, against the Night Stalker and the Big Cat, who we knew later as Mr. Hughes. And they just decimated those two guys in quick fashion. And I can remember, I can still see it in my head, the fanfare that said, you know, he did that whole, you know, like, applaud me. And the fans were going crazy. And I think Sid was in an interesting spot back then because they were trying to present him still as a bad guy, but he was definitely getting over with the fans in terms of them wanting to see him go in there and kick someone's ass and be this big, rugged brute, basically. You know, Horsemen briefly reunite with Sid in 1991, the early part of the year, that infamous War Games match where Brian Pillman gets knocked out legit with the power bomb when Sid brings him up too fast or too high and he hits his head on the cage and then gets power bombed to the mat. So, but Sid wasn't long for the world in WCW, but I do want to, before we get to his WWE, WWF run, this is the one and only WCW action figure I ever bought. I bought this, I think probably early 1990. It's a Gloob, and he is wearing the WCW championship belt. But I love this figure, and I actually just a few years ago unboxed it finally. But again, that's how much of a fan I was of Sid that, you know, he was the one and only figure that I bought for myself from the WCW lineup. And I don't think it was anything that I did, you know, by the time these figures came out, I was a working teenager and, you know, I wasn't necessarily putting wrestling figures on my Christmas list every year. So buying things at that age, it had to mean something. And Sid definitely meant something. He feuds with the Giant Gonzalez, or I guess he was El Gigante in WCW, gets beat in a stretcher match and leaves. What were your thoughts when you saw Sid show up in the WWF in the summer of spring of 1991?
Did he come in prior to the announcement that he was going to be the referee at SummerSlam?
Yes. Yeah, he had come in like May, had a dark match or two actually against Ted DiBiase, and then did some, you know, just kind of enhancement, you know, did some squash matches before he actually ended up being the referee or being announced as the referee.
Yeah, you know, being a fan of Sid, I was glad to see him show up. And, you know, I guess probably the big head scratcher, or the if social media had been around back then, the biggest complaint would be like, oh, why are they, you know, changing his name to Sid Justice? Why isn't they just being Sid Vicious? And I don't know if there was ever any legal battles between the estate of Sid Vicious, the punk singer, and, you know, Sid the wrestler. I guess not, since he's used the name since Sid Justice. But no, I was eager to see him, you know, see what he would do in WWF. And I think he kind of got screwed over in the long run. Just as a fan, you know, I would have rather seen him be champion.
Well, let's talk about that, because I do find it weird. And again, 90, 91, the early 90s, probably up until we hit the Attitude Era, but really 90, 91, things start kind of changing. Maybe not for the better, you know, through some rose colored glasses nostalgia, but look back and really examine it, it does seem a bit odd, some of the choices or decisions that were made, and I'm sure they were made for certain reasons, but why in the world would you have this guy as a special guest referee? He's a huge attraction. You know, I always viewed special guest referees as someone that was going to maybe advance a storyline, or someone like Jesse Ventura, who's maybe not an active wrestler, but still is going to want to get in there and be involved, or it's a celebrity. And with Sid, and I know things went south with the Ultimate Warrior. He ran out that night and didn't come back until WrestleMania 8, you know, in 1992. So, but there was no, you know, I feel like maybe Hogan, Warrior, and Sid versus Sergeant Slaughter, Jake the Snake Roberts and The Undertaker would have been a better main event, and you could have told a story there. Again, the Iraq war thing to me was, it had already ended, and why we were still living that, to me, it just didn't make any sense. And, you know, of course, at the end, we get Hogan and Sid posing, and maybe they were planting the seeds then for the WrestleMania match. I don't know. There were so many things, so many weird circumstances that happened between SummerSlam and the Royal Rumble, and then, of course, WrestleMania, that it didn't make a whole lot of sense. But would you have rather seen Sid win the Royal Rumble in 92 when the title was on the line, or would you have rather seen him beat Ric Flair at WrestleMania and become the heavyweight champion?
Probably. I don't know if I would have had him be champion at that time, per se. But if those are my choices, I'd probably have him beat Flair, because I think Flair winning the Rumble works with the Bobby Heenan commentary and the whole package. Going back to the SummerSlam match, though, I could understand the making Sid the special enforcer, a special ref, if the match itself had been built on a lot of chaos and they needed someone to step in who wasn't going to be able to be bullied or taken advantage of. You know, your normal referee, you know, Dave Hebner, Earl Hebner, you know, they could easily just be knocked out or tossed to the side. But if you put Sid in there, if you had a huge feud going, and I don't think that was the case with the match. Because again, like you, I mean, I echo what you said, the Gulf War scenario was got done. No one, I won't say no one cared, but it wasn't slaughter, you know, and I don't, nothing against Sergeant Slaughter, but I don't think, especially at that time in his career, even without a Gulf War story, like no one is buying him as championship material, especially against Hogan.
Right.
And, you know, would it have been better to do a Hogan Warrior rematch with Sid as the ref? But then again, both guys are already faces. You've already had the face versus face match. And I don't think either one of them was going to be heel at this time. So, but I think that would have worked better in a better using of Sid if they had told a better story. And then, you get to the Rumble, and Hogan is a dirty, dirty cheat, as we all have known, and, kind of screwing up. And I think that was done, I guess, well enough to subvert the Flair Hogan match. If they weren't going to do it, at least it gave them plausible reason to do so.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and even leading up to that, you know, when you think back on Sid's run, that first run in the WWF, he's there less than a year or right at a year. He gets injured shortly after SummerSlam. He ends up saving Randy Savage and Elizabeth at the wedding from Jake and The Undertaker. There's a cobra in one of the gifts, and Sid ends up coming in and making the save. So we're getting a Sid versus Jake feud that leads us up to Survivor Series. But before we get there, he ends up tearing a bicep and becoming injured, and it becomes a six-man tag at Survivor Series instead, with the Big Boss Man and the Legion of Doom taking on IRS and the Natural Disasters. Jake, I don't know if Jake got hurt or they suspended, they pulled him out of the match for some reason too. But anyway. I don't want to say snake bitten with using the Jake the Snake terminology earlier, but looking back on it now, it was cool at the time and it was awesome. But looking back on it, it was not going great. Then we get to the Rumble. He returns there, makes it to the final two, which I thought was very interesting, that two guys who just a year earlier were main eventing on pay-per-views in WCW were main eventing in the last two men in the Royal Rumble. And like you said, when they've gone back and they've changed the crowd response when Hogan pulls Sid out, the fans boo Hogan when that happens. And they went back and doctored that up to again tell that story and lead us to WrestleMania. And leading into WrestleMania, there were going to be five contenders for Flair's championship. at first we're going to get Hogan, and somewhere along the way they pivot and go with Macho Man Randy Savage. We know that's how that story goes. But then we get Hogan and Sid. And let me ask you about this. What did you think at the time of Flair and Savage being middle of the WrestleMania card for the first time in the history of the event where a championship is defended? You know, Hogan was champion at one, but didn't defend the belt. But that was the first time that the title was not defended in the main event of a WrestleMania. It was Hogan versus Sid.
Yeah. Because I didn't watch the show live, and because social media again wasn't around, I probably didn't think about it. And I probably figured later on, of course, Hogan's going to main event because that's the only place that Hogan can wrestle unless he's on a house show and wants to get out of there before the crowd. So,
Yeah, looking back on it, and you know, this isn't going to be a crap all over Hulk Hogan
podcast. That might be.
I do think, though, it put a lot of confidence, or showed a lot of confidence coming from the top, putting Sid in that position, because again, he's kind of the new guy still. He's been hurt. So they're putting him in there and testing the waters with him. But I think in hindsight, I kind of agree with you. I would have been interested to see, because I don't think the Randy Savage heavyweight title run was anything spectacular. That second run, you know, after beating Flair. But if you do Flair versus Sid, I don't know what you do then with Hogan and Savage on WrestleMania, which, you know, is obviously the biggest card of the year. So it's just kind of fun sometimes to go back and think about and think, well, what if they would have done this or this instead? We, of course, know that Ultimate Warrior returns at this event. And there were issues between Sid and the Warrior. And I think also it kind of went back to Sid wanting that time to spend with family, to play softball, to do his own thing. And I think WWE at the time was desperate for someone. Desperate's probably not the right word, but they wanted that next big thing. And they had it right there in Sid. But I don't think Sid completely embraced it. And he's talked about that in interviews in the past. So I just think of what life would have been like in wrestling, how it would have been different had he stuck around. You know, he left shortly after the Warrior's return, and that's why we got Warrior versus Papa Shango instead. But had Sid stuck around, you know, the feuds that the potential that we could have seen from that end, I think would have been pretty limitless. And maybe WWE, you know, it did, both companies suffered, but I don't think WWE would have suffered as much had Sid stayed around, because he was still that big menacing figure, but he was also viable. He wasn't a big John Studd or a King Kong Bundy where you thought, oh, they're just there to be fed to Hulk Hogan. I think Sid could have been the man if they would have, you know, given him the opportunity.
I mean, it's interesting to think, and I'm kind of surprised that I haven't seen more throughout history of people complaining about Sid because of his, for lack of a better term, non-devotion to the wrestling business. Like you said, you know, he, and by all accounts of what I've read since his passing and the video that WWE put out, he was a family man. He wanted to be with the family. I mean, I don't know how serious the softball league stuff is, or, you know, just something that he did when he wasn't wrestling. But he seemed to be, and I think because of his status in wrestling, could take a few big paydays and then leave for a while and then come back. You know, he wasn't needing to be on the road 200 days a year, 300 days a year, whatever. But I also think, did it serve him better in the long run of doing it that way? Because then he became the spectacle. He became the special attraction instead of, if he was there all the time, you know, we've seen it, especially in today's wrestling society where guys are there, you know, for 10 years nonstop, and you're just like, oh yeah, they're back. He's wrestling it. You know, it's not anything special.
Yeah.
So I think maybe keeping that air of mystery or air of just awesomeness with helped Sid.
I thought it was cool with him too, that he was able to go back and forth multiple times, kind of like a double J. You know, we saw a handful of guys that were able to jump back and forth. But I think Sid may have been one of the more successful examples of that, because like I said, he leaves in 90, he gets to the WWF in 91. He leaves in 92, is back at WCW for a little bit, ends up having that incident with Arn Anderson, where I think both guys, you know, got into a fight, and I think both of them have accepted responsibility for the actions that, that happened in that. Then he eventually goes, you know, I think he did a little bit of indie work and then ends up back in the WWF in 1996. And this is probably, to me, this was probably peak Sid and his most successful time in the company. He comes in, you know, teams up with Shawn Michaels and Ahmed Johnson, replacing, ironically enough, the Ultimate Warrior. And by summer, you know, he's there in the summer. We're leading into, and he's a good guy, and he's being cheered. And he ends up having that match with, you know what? Did he come back? I'm wrong. He came back in 95 because he was Shawn Michaels' bodyguard.
Bodyguard.
Yes. God, how could I forget that? Because Diesel had left Shawn. They split. Yeah, that's what it was. Sid came back.
Yeah, because at 11, it was Sid versus, or Shawn versus Diesel for the title.
Yeah.
And Sid accidentally, I think, grabbed Shawn's leg instead of Diesel's. And then the next night on Raw, Shawn told Sid he could, like, take the night off. And that's when Sid turned on him. And
yeah. Yes. So I missed a year there. Yes, the big time story's going on there. And then I don't remember if he got hurt or something happened where he was gone for a bit and he came back though in 96. And that's when he did the stuff with the six man tag. And then rumor has it that Vader was supposed to be the one to face Shawn Michaels at Survivor Series and win the belt. But Shawn and Vader did not have good chemistry at SummerSlam allegedly. And so Sid ended up getting inserted into that spot. And I got to say, I was, even though we talked about his size and his being over and stuff, I was still surprised. And I remember I ordered that pay-per-view, Survivor Series 1996, watching it when I got home from work that night on VHS and being shocked. You know, this was before spoilers were out and all that good stuff. So I was legit surprised that he won. Were you surprised to see him beat Shawn Michaels, who had just only won the heavyweight championship after all that buildup with him, you know, he'd only been the champion since WrestleMania, so just a handful of months, and we've already got a new champion in Sid.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioning it, I completely forgot that Sid won the title there. I know he went into WrestleMania 12 as champion, but, and we'll talk, 13. I'm sure, about that. 13, yeah. But yeah, I completely forgot, because then he lost it back to Shawn at Rumble, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he holds on to it for a minute. Defends it against Bret Hart at the December pay-per-view. I don't remember what it was called. And then at Royal Rumble 1997 in San Antonio, Shawn's hometown, they're in the stadium. Says Bret, or I'm sorry, Shawn wins it back. But then this is that whole era of Shawn losing his smile and all that. He drops the, you know, he relinquishes the belt. They do the fatal four-way.
Let me ask you real quick, because this is still probably one of the best Raw moments. If I had to make a top five list, this would be up there. Did you watch Raw live the night they had the Bret Hart cage match?
Yes.
I remember watching it, and I taped it, and then I left like right after the match. I turned it off after the match was over and came back and finished like the last 5 minutes. And yeah, I think that was USA having somebody on the censor button, because nothing was censored in that post show.
Yeah. That's the night that Sid beats Bret for the championship, right? Or was that?
No, that was to see Sid was already champion.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of who.
Cause Bret won the title in the Fatal Four Way in February. And then I thought Sid beat him the next night on Raw.
On Raw, but there's a cage match later on.
Cage match came later.
I think so. Yeah. And because I don't think Sid, I wish I could remember who Bret was fighting. I think it was like a match to see who would face they face Austin that night, and they, like, it was supposed to start the show, and then somebody attacked Brett, or Austin attacked Brett. So then they moved it to the top of the second hour, and something else happened, and so they made it. You know, it was like one of those things where, because they were, we were in the Monday Night War, it was something to try to keep people tuned in throughout the entire show.
Well, and it was interesting to me, though, because, again, nothing against Sid, but we, with Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold Steve Austin, even though he wasn't officially, hadn't had the rocket strapped to his back just yet, but I would not have expected Sid to win the championship again and then go into WrestleMania as the heavyweight champion. But that's exactly what we got, and The Undertaker ends up being the contender there and beats Sid for the championship. And second WrestleMania for Sid, second main event for Sid. So,
and is that the one where the Taker at one point goes, what's that smell?
Yeah.
It smells like Dookie.
I believe that is exactly what happened. Yeah. So he sticks around briefly and then kind of fades away by mid-1997. And I will say I did get to see Sid at a house show in 96 in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. He beat Goldust. And again, the crowd loved him. I mean, he was this ginormous man. And I remember him coming out to the crowd, and, or, you know, coming through, and we were standing by the ring guard, or, you know, the guardrails to try to get pictures and, you know, clap hands with him and stuff. I got to go through my pictures because I thought I got a picture of him, but I don't remember now if I did. But anyway, he leaves for a while and actually does USWA and is kind of more on the indie scene. And this is where, to me, I posted it on Facebook when it was announced that Sid had died. Yeah, I hate wrestler deaths. And the past month alone, you know, between Afa and Sika, the Wild Samoans both dying. We also lost Kevin Sullivan. We just did a podcast a few weeks ago on Kevin Sullivan's death. You know, it sucks. We talked about the Iron Sheik after he died, superstar Billy Graham, all these legends when we were kids and growing up and seeing them go, Bray Wyatt and Terry Funk just a year ago. We just hit that anniversary. So seeing Sid's death, it really hit me because I didn't know he was sick.
I think that's the bigger shock. You know, kind of same with Kevin Sullivan, where it had just come out recently about Sullivan, you know, being in poor health before he passed. But Sid, it was a complete shock because hadn't heard anything about him for like a couple of years. And then just had this pass. But if we had if word was out that he had cancer, at least it would have been a little more, it still would have been shocking, but it would have softened the blow a little bit because you would have been like, oh, okay, we've kind of been expecting that. But just to come out of nowhere and just, and when you just, you know, see a headline that says Sid passes away, you're like, wait, what the?
Yeah. Well, you snapped it to me, and that was the first I had seen of it because I'd been kind of busy in a meeting at work. And so, and my response was, I dropped the F bomb and went, I was stunned. I couldn't believe it. But it reminded me, and I think part of the reason why, one, I was a fan of his, but also I had a chance to meet him a couple of times. And when I worked in Alabama, there was a little indie promotion there. A guy that owned a gym, his name was Wade Gann, and he was a big time wrestling fan. He had a mullet, and you know, I mean, he looked the part. You know, he looked like your 80s wrestling guy. And so, but this was, you know, the late 90s. So, but he wrestled under a mask, Wade did. But he found out that I was a wrestling fan. And so we talked, and, you know, this was again before social media. So I, you know, go, he had a gym and I'd go over and, you know, talk. And he was also a firefighter. So if I was doing a story, we would shoot the breeze about wrestling and whatever. Well, he contacted me and said that he was bringing in Sid to wrestle. He knew Sid from his days in Arkansas and West Memphis. And so he's bringing in Sid and, you know, if I wanted to go to the show, I could go to the show and get video and he was going to come back for a bigger event later. And I had gone over there and I was like, well, can I interview him? And he's like, oh yeah, sure. And I just recently found online, they sell this adapter thing for VHS that you can record onto your computer. So I'm going to buy this and get a VHS, try to track one down and try to find this video that I did with Sid. Because I'm back there, you know, I'm pretty timid at this stage. I'm, you know, a year or two into my reporting.
You're not a former tag team champion. So you're like, right. I'm walking.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I remember they said, you know, you can come backstage and interview. And so I, you know, I'm standing there and I've got my microphone in my hand and I got my camera on my shoulder because we didn't have cameramen back then. And, you know, I ask him a question, like a legitimate question, thinking we're going to do like a Q&A. And he snatches the mic out of my hand and just starts screaming this promo. Like he cuts a promo. It's not an interview. It's just a promo. And he's screaming and I'm coming back here. Cause he got screwed in the match that he had been in. And I mean, he was hot and I was so intimidated. I didn't know what to do. And I'm like, okay, thank you. And so, you know, we ran a clip of it on the news, but then Wade called me and he was like, he's coming back. Is there any chance that he can, you know, we can do a longer interview with him, an actual sit down interview with him. And I'm like, well, if he would want to do something on our newscast, he can come be my co-anchor at the time. I had a male co-anchor. He was a big wrestling fan too. So we ended up doing on the 6 o'clock news, a live interview with Sid Vicious for probably the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 minutes of the newscast. That's all we just went back and forth. We were just asking him all kinds of questions. This was right after his stint with ECW. And I think after he wrestled that match that weekend in Alabama, I don't think it was another week or two that he showed up at WCW. And we were asking him, you know, what's next for you? And he obviously wasn't going to give us any spoilers or anything. And he made it sound like, you know, he was just happy doing the indie stuff and doing stuff with his family. And so when he showed, that was so cool because he had been on ECW TV. He's on this little podunk TV station in Alabama. And now he's in WCW and then wins the world championship a short time later. So it was very surreal and very cool. And I'll have the link to the interview back up on this podcast if people want to go back and listen to it. It's not very long, but he talks about working out and his diet and you know, being in the ring and all that stuff. But again, a great guy. We talked obviously before the newscast started. We talked to him afterward and hung out for a bit, but just a real great individual, family man, like everybody has said and kind of echoed. And I was sad to see the other day, he did an interview not too very long ago where he's kind of talking about, and if you read between the lines, now you know why, you know, he's talking about time. And now that Vince is gone from WWE, maybe it's time for him to go into the Hall of Fame because I guess Vince had an issue with him. And I'm sad that he did not make that, you know, while he was still here. But definitely Hall of Fame worthy. I mean, I think that's a no-brainer.
Yeah, I was going to say real quick, when he showed up in ECW, did you see any of that? Were you watching ECW at the time? Did you have access? Or
my co-anchor that I was talking about, Mark, he would record ECW. He had the, I guess, the statute of limitations had run out. He had that illegal device you could get to get free pay-per-views. So he would record them and then bring them in. And I remember watching some of it, but I don't remember specifics, if that makes sense.
And just for the record, can we have Mark's last name and last known address just there? No, you know, it was interesting because I was a huge ECW fan at the time.
Yeah.
And Sid is the type of guy who you would not expect to be welcomed in the ECW by the ECW fans. Because he, like you said, he's not a work rate guy. He's not a great promo guy, but he just had that aura of, and ECW used him, you know, just to come in and beat somebody up in 30 seconds and then leave. And that was, you know, I'm trying to think if he, I mean, I'm sure he was on some pay-per-view, but I don't remember other than maybe Spike Dudley. I don't know who, you know, if he ever had any like real name opponents. I think John Cronus at one point. But yeah, it was interesting to see how the crowd reacted to Sid at that time. And, you know, obviously giving ECW's business practices, financial, you know, I don't think he would have been in their long term. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting little blip on his career that he could walk into an ECW crowd and have them chanting, you know, one more time or powerbomb or, you know.
Yeah. I think it's a testament to who he was, you know, two-time WWE champion. I think he ends up winning the WCW heavyweight title three times. And I know in that era, it was kind of hot potato anyway, but still, you know, he's in there with the best of the best. I think he beat Kevin Nash maybe at one point, or maybe Randy Savage. I know he and Chris Benoit had that match that Chris Benoit eventually ends up leaving and going to the WWE. I was kind of surprised he never made it back to the WWE until 2012. He wrestles Heath Slater, the one-man band. I did actually watch that match. It was on Twitter this morning and went back and watched that. It was quick.
Yeah, because that was during the time when Heath was getting beat up by legends every week, right?
Yeah, and then it culminated at Raw 1000 where Lita beats Heath. And Sid and Vader, and there were a handful of other guys that had beaten Heath along the way that were all there to celebrate. So he was on Raw 1000, which I thought was pretty cool too, but a timeless character for sure.
Yeah, I looked it up, his career, and that was in, like you said, in 2012, and he hadn't wrestled, you know, I didn't realize that 2001, his last WCW, the last WCW pay-per-view was his last major match, you know.
Was that Sid when he broke his leg?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and he did have a few matches with X-Pac in 2009 on a European tour. I want to track this match down. He fought Eddie Kingston in 2011.
Oh wow!
But you know, some USWA stuff with Jerry Lawler. But yeah he really didn't after and. I mean, I think after a horrific break like he had, I don't know how much he was actually wrestling post then. But yeah, it was just interesting that 23 years was technically his last major match.
Yeah. I think also one thing I wanted to jump back on that we've talked about the talk show segments on wrestling before and, you know, Piper's Pit, the Flower Shop, the Body Shop. Flair for the Gold.
We should have had Sid's Court.
Yeah. Well, Sid's involved, I think, in two of the more iconic episodes of one, Flair for the Gold, where the Shockmaster comes in. You can hear Sid on the, you know, that was a live show. So I kind of felt for those guys. But also the Barbershop. I thought, other than Shawn Michaels super kicking Marty Jannetty through the window or throwing him.
Marty Jannetty jumped through the window.
Yeah, when Marty tried to escape. I think the other most memorable episode of the Barbershop is when Sid's looking for Hogan and comes out there and bullies Beefcake, who's, of course, Hogan's best friend. And he's destroying it. Do you remember this? He's destroying he's destroying the Barbershop. Go back and look it up. Okay. And he's swinging a chair and he's knocking stuff all over the place. And he hits a can of shaving cream. And it just sprays all over. Like, I don't know how, and he might have gotten it in his eyes. Go back and watch it though. But he's, again, to his credit, he stays in character and just goes nuts. And so that moment sticks out to me as well. And then, you know, kind of on the more lighthearted, funny side, I don't remember what pay-per-view it was.
SummerSlam?
Was it SummerSlam? You know what I'm talking about?
And yeah,
he's doing the interview and he goes, "Oh, let's do that again." And JR goes, "We're live, pal." I don't know why, but that tickled me as well. But man, what a great guy! I loved Sid.
Yeah, there's that one, and then there's the one where he was feuding with Nash in WCW, and he comes out and like, you know, you're half the man I am, and I have half the brain that you have.
And didn't Hall and Nash? Because I think Hall and Nash kind of jumped on that, and
yeah.
Didn't they wear a Sid, like they had a Sid mask made or something and kind of mocking him? Yeah. But man, what a great character. What a, you know, I don't want to say he was before his time because this was in the era of the giants and the big men who I think he though stood tall with those guys. You know, I would put, you know, if you're doing a Mount Rushmore of big men like that, you know, Undertaker and Kane ilk. Mm-hmm. Sid's up there. You know, he's my of those guys, he's definitely my favorite. But I think he hung with them. He proved himself winning the championship and just staying over with the fans and the response that they always gave him. Even though at times they were trying to portray him as the bad guy, he was still so beloved that fans seemingly didn't care and cheered him anyway. So,
yeah, again, I think it's just the way he was presented. Like mm-hmm. he was, you know, I think not in today's environment, unfortunately, like, even though with his size, I think he would, if he was being a heel, he would be the, you know, the type that would kind of back down or try to weasel out of, and he wasn't, he was like, hey, you know, I'll kick your ass if you come out near me. And
yeah,
I think that helped. I will say, you know, probably the biggest disappointment for me from his death, other than his passing, of course, is I had always hoped that he would show up on AEW for a one-off and just do something with the Acclaimed, because they could have scissored each other.
Oh my God. I'm like, where is he going with this? And it was so obvious that I went right over my head for a second there, but yep. I mean, wow.
Wow. Oh, well, maybe hopefully they'll do something as a tribute.
Yeah. Yeah. As we said, we are recording prior to, you know, I know all the, been a lot of tweets and videos and memories and whatnot shared. I just wanted to share some thoughts and memories, because it's not often that we get to meet these larger.
Yeah, I was going to say, you talked about your meeting. I did meet him at one of the Wrestle Reunion shows. Hmm. I think probably around 2013, 2014. Just very quick, you know, just got a quick photo with him. And, you know, me, I'm kind of like you where I don't really go into these things wanting to have conversations, because I don't like talking wrestling, which is odd seeing as I'm on a wrestling podcast, right. But with wrestlers, you know, I'd rather talk about something more, you know, another hobby that they have, or, you know, I guess if I knew more about softball, I could have asked said about that, but, and you never know how they're going to be. Like you said, are they going to be in character? And you're like, yeah. I don't want to talk to the character, you know, I'd rather talk to the person.
Yeah.
But again, he was very nice, very, you know, he was mingling with everyone else there that wanted to talk to him. And yeah, it's just a, you know, real shame that he's, you know, 63 years old. It's only like 2 years older than you. So.
Yeah. Definitely sad news. And, you know, again, though, we have the legacy of seeing him and they are the, you know, the advantage of being able to go back and watch and have those memories and whatnot. And I had talked on last week's podcast about doing a John Cena show. We will still do that. I'm not sure when, but once we're back in our respective home states and able to get to a computer and have Wi-Fi and all that good stuff, Chad and I will connect again and talk more wrestling stuff. But in the meantime, we want to hear from you. Let us know what is on your mind. What are your memories of Sid? What are your thoughts on the current day wrestling product? And where would Sid have fit in today's product? Like Chad said, would he have done well with the Acclaim? I think it would have definitely been entertaining, to say the very least. Chad, any final thoughts before we say goodbye this week?
You know, just a sarcastic comment. Again, I was thinking, could they make an action figure of Sid that comes with a squeegee?
I think it's possible. Anything's possible now. And there are so many at home.
Very custom made.
Yeah. We may see it sometime. So on that note, we are going to wrap up this week's episode. Friends, thank you for listening and or watching to this week's podcast. Have a great week, and we will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.